want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam prison.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence that I got in front of my computer destruction.
Everyone, welcome to the May 16th edition of the In and Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with
VR.
VR in the house. Well, we are actually doing the show late, so all those people that have noticed that the show hasn't been there, it's because VR didn't come over. Well, he came over during the show. We're going to do it Sunday, right? And then I was feeling mentally drained. I said, well, hey, let's do it another day. And then
and I was physically exhausted.
And he was physically exhausted. What were we doing? No. So anyways, and you notice the mic will sound a little different. I'll explain that here in a minute. Anyways, so yeah, this man was supposed to come over Tuesday. No call.
No show. I should have been fired.
Yeah, so I usually put the show up Tuesday, and so nothing happened. And then Wednesday, no call.
No show.
So I was like, no crap. So then I called this guy today, and he's like, hey, what's going on? Hey. You know, as if nothing happened. Hey, it's Thursday?
Oops.
I thought it was Monday, man.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I got a little perplexed on my time and discombobulated on my, you know, little days of the week scenario there. And, you know, my soul is a little worn thin.
Yeah. So, he's here now. But here's the deal. Okay, here's the deal, and I hope this comes out all right. We had to borrow a microphone, okay? Because
you hear it in the now, we're completely ghetto.
And community-based.
Exactly.
So, you know, the mics, two of the other mics we had were community mics, and that had to go back to the community that they originated from, and then now we had to go back to the community and borrow another mic. So that's what we did. But this mic
But this is a completely different community.
Oh, yeah, it's right down the street.
Yeah.
And they thought we were going to mob them and rob their homes. Because
we are kind of scary looking, at least I am.
Yeah.
I've got what you call a radio face.
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, so anyways, we were there and got the mic. But this mic is one that, like, captures everything. So we played with the sound a little bit, and we're doing the best we can. I'm actually trying to sit as far away from I can from this thing. I tried to put VR in the corner.
And I'm really happy about that as well, let me tell you.
Yeah, try to put VR in the corner next to the other stuff over there in the corner.
I feel so much more at home in the corner.
Yeah.
And I feel much more secure. That slips way over there.
Yeah, but we noticed that the cord doesn't go that far in the corner, so he's going to have to stay where he is on my bed. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. So anyways, no, he really does sit on the bed. I'm actually in a chair about 20 feet away, very large room. Yeah. By the couch and air it off on the couch. All right, let's get to the news. We've got lots of it. And, hey, the next show will be there on time, right?
We can all hope.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, first news of the day. Not very exciting news, but it's news nonetheless. Intel scraps its desktop and server chip program.
Really?
Plan, yeah. Intel said on Friday, which back on May 7th, said it scrapped the development of two new computer chips in order to rush. Let me turn that music down just so it doesn't add to all the stuff going on here. That it scrapped the development of two new computer chips in order to rush the marketplace with a more efficient chip technology more than a year ahead of schedule.
Ooh, well, that's kind of nice.
Yeah. The chips are being canceled, including the fourth generation Pentium 4 chip codenamed Tejas, or Tejas, depending on where you
Tejas.
Come from.
It's probably sponsored by the Mexican food restaurant.
Sweet. Which was to be sold next year. And also, the Xeon processor for low-end computers, codenamed Jayhawk. So that's going to be out of there. But instead, next year, Intel will be selling chips for both desktop and notebook computers that combine two microprocessors into a single piece of silicon. It's like putting two cylinders into a car instead of having one big cylinder.
Well, it's probably like an array setup.
Kind of like
or
that.
Or is it parallel?
An array is more than two.
Yeah.
And then Intel's talking better. AMD basically said that they have the capability to do dual core chips, but they will not introduce the technology until they feel that there is a market need.
Well, there's always a market need for faster. You know.
Maybe AMD is doing such a good job they don't have to go to the two. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
utilizing the single core maybe.
Well, we'll see. You know, we've got to put that up to the porn test.
The porn test. How many porn streams can you... How many porn videos can you have playing on the screen at one time?
That's right. That's what really all matters.
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's why we have, multi-gig hard drives and cable internet. And so that's the only reason we have it. Not to, swap family photos. It's to download porn.
Yeah, that's, of course, why we have high speed. But anyways,
and music.
Music, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the two driving factors of the internet and computing.
Was video games.
Yeah. There's always good systems for that, though.
Mental and physical stimulation, neat. Nothing for intellectual things or anything like that.
It's all primal.
Yeah.
It's all primal.
Because if you really want to do intellectual stuff, all you need is 400 megahertz processor. That's right. Put Linux on there and no X and just go for it, baby. Go for it.
Yeah, because it doesn't take much computing process to handle text.
Yeah. All right. Well, next story here is that there is something new coming out. Some more Star Wars technology here.
Ooh.
Basically, as the scope of battlefield threats continues to expand, so does the versatility of high-energy laser systems to defeat them. Can't you see that? Just zap a terrorist right there. You know, he's just going to press the button. He's gone, zapped.
Well, you know the problem that's kind of frightening is imagine they can't have that good of security.
Watch that movie, Real Genius, where they invent that laser beam.
Oh yeah, that was a funny movie. But now you could break into the satellite system and reprogram it to just zap random people.
Yeah, I would have to think that that'd be pretty hard.
But the possibility is still there.
Oh, yeah, it's there. Here's what happened. The U.S. Army's Mobile Tactical Energy High Energy Laser, MTHEL, testbed destroyed a rocket on May 4th that's larger, faster, and that flies higher than previous threats destroyed by a laser weapon demonstrator. Tuesday's successful intercept of a destruction of a large caliber rocket carrying a live warhead took place at 12:45 p.m. During a live fire test on the MTHEL testbed at the Army's White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. A large caliber rocket is capable of twice the range, achieves more than three times the altitude, and carries a much larger warhead than previous targets. Many countries already possess large caliber rockets. The destroyed rocket is a representative of threats faced by U.S. and Israeli forces.
But I don't think that's an ICBM, was it?
I did not say. Told you everything else, but that.
Yeah, and that's what's really important, because if it can actually, knock out an ICBM, now we're talking about something. Because, Mexico or Canada is not going to launch a large caliber rocket at us.
No.
No, but,
we got to give them things to bitch about for Canada, and we got to give work to Mexicans.
That's right.
Sorry, that's got to be sounding really bad. But, hey, you know what? There aren't a lot of people come up here because... obviously, they think there's a better life here. I don't know. All right, leave it at that. No more talk of that. Okay. Anything else you have to say there, VR?
Yeah, so, that's great. That's good, still experimental, technology. But not in any real working fashion.
Yeah, that was a prototype.
Yeah. I think I actually saw that, though. I saw a strange streak in
green,
the sky.
Green streak.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
That was probably it. Because I saw another rocket launch a couple of years ago from White. Yeah.
I saw it twice. I saw it one night and I saw it the next night.
Yeah, that was another one.
It was green, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have to talk to JP on that, because JP and me saw it together.
All right.
And it was weird. It was like this, it was this green light that just shot. And it didn't make any sense. And it came downwards.
Yeah, that could be. No, I just saw a strange trail. So I just saw the after effect.
Oh, mine, me and JP saw the light. Like that. Boom. It was really bright green. And I saw it again a second night in a row.
Well, that could have been the second test. And probably failed, so they didn't report on it.
Which directions did we see that in? I'll think about that later. Man, that's...
Because if it's coming directly east of us. Because it's like White Sands is like on the same...
I saw it there.
Wasn't it then?
It was really weird, though.
That was probably just a UFO. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. It nothing doing with chickens.
Looked like a, you know, like a infrared. You know, the night vision. You know, where you see like rockets going night vision. You know, looked like a green thing going. You know, down. It was really weird. All right. Well, it took Adam Arkin and David Schaffner just $200,000 and a grad student to develop a potential treatment for AIDS, and that scares them. I don't know what that line means at the end. But that's because the therapy itself is a virus. The Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory assistant professors created a virus altered to latch onto HIV and mute its ability to become AIDS. They've tested the theory in a computer model and in cells in a dish. The results have been promising, and if they continue in that vein, the researchers could begin animal testing by the end of this year.
Wow. Wow.
Arkansas.
Thank God for grad students.
Yeah, yeah, because those people that get lots of money seem to have nice cars, you know?
And don't produce anything. But grad students who are trying to actually like earn something, you know, do great work. Support grad students. Yay!
Yeah, back this is May 13th. Arkansas said this week at International Biotech Summit at the University of California, Berkeley, that this is almost too easy for him and his colleagues to build the anti-HIV virus. He said, if I can do it, anyone can do it, Arkin said. And that's the problem. Basically, he said, by using a computer model of what happens to the immune system when it's infected with HIV, Arkin and his colleagues have designed a potential AIDS treatment that would remain with the patient as long as he or she has HIV, meaning it would prevent AIDS from arising even in patients who otherwise would have developed the disease after a decade of latency. They also predict HIV would not become resistant to the virus. And the treatment is made of gutted HIV virus. The harmful parts of the virus are removed, and in their place, the researchers have inserted a DNA cargo that inhibits HIV's ability to kill immune cells. It latches onto the natural HIV and spreads along with it, even from person to person.
Ooh, so it could actually become completely inept.
Yeah.
We could all get it, and it would do squat.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is freaking beautiful. And finally, somebody thought outside of the box enough to go, hey, let's fight a really weird virus with a virus.
Yeah, he said he used Google. I'm just joking. Google again, coming out with some more helpful hints for us pathetic humans. No, yeah, very interesting stuff. Well, here's something else that's interesting. You know, that's a problem with, definitely a problem with physical security for Sprint. No. Verizon, sorry. The theft of network cards from a Verizon central office in New York has caused some customers to lose their internet access. Back on May 3rd, these are the cards that are at the internet provider. Somebody was actually stealing those cards. A handful of corporate customers were left without email and internet access Monday after the theft of networking equipment from a New York City office late Sunday. Law enforcement officials said four DS3 cards were reported missing from Manhattan co-location facility owned by Verizon Communication, Inc., the theft at 240 East 38th Street, if you want to go check it out, sightseers out there, occurred just after 10:30 p.m. on Sunday and is being investigated by New York City's police and members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, according to NYPD spokesman, late Lieutenant Brian Burke. We found backup cards in the area, said Charles Fleckenstein, spokesman for Sprint in the Overland Park camp. All the other cards are now on site in New York. They are being installed at this moment, which is back May 3rd. Service will be restored to customers as these cards are being installed, he said. Sprint officials and other ISPs were affected by the incident but declined to identify them. Verizon, speaking of lots of thinking in the back of my head, spokesman Dan Diaz would not identify the providers that were affected by the theft of the equipment. Diaz said no Verizon internet customers were affected by the outage. Well, good for Verizon. It didn't affect their customers, but it affected everyone else that was connected to it. Well, not everyone, but a few people.
Yeah, that's good. Good responsibility there.
So, yeah. At least the customers were taken care of.
Yeah. Screw everybody else. Yeah, they can fend for themselves,
they
even though they depend on us.
Fend for themselves. All right. Well, anything interesting going on in your life there, VR?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Not at all?
No.
What the heck were you doing for those 2 days? Do I want to ask?
No, it was nothing weird. I don't, you know, it was nothing abnormal.
I see.
Yeah. It's just old, good old, you know, day-to-day stuff. Putting the nose to the grindstone so it keeps spinning. Wearing my very being and soul into ash and dust. And that is what we do every day. Why? So we can consume more, so we can, you know, work more, and so we have more time-saving devices, so we can work more to...
I think you said that on the In and Out show, I think, maybe 3 years ago.
Probably.
Yeah, we're talking about...
Good little cycle there.
All these devices are certainly making things a lot more busy. But we get our porn.
Yeah.
You know, these basic human needs are being handled. We're getting our chat.
Our pseudo-human interaction through completely...
Controlled means.
Through an inorganic means.
And controlled means, too, no doubt. You don't have to deal with those
Which
people.
Actually restructures the whole symbolic interaction through this flat screen and ones and zeros that, you know, really don't... It's not as voluptuous as, like, real, you know, face-to-face interaction.
Hmm. Very well put there, sir. All right. Well, Kevin Mitnick, this guy. Amazing man. Okay, well, basically, Kevin Mitnick busts a bomb hoaxer.
Really?
Yeah, check this out. Ex-hacker Kevin Mitnick is a hero to a small town in River Rouge, Michigan, after using his tech skills to help officials nab the culprit behind a harrowing series of bomb threats. Basically, the trouble began a few months ago when staff members at River Rouge High School began receiving threatening phone calls at home from an anonymous caller. Police Department Lieutenant John Keck says that on April 2nd, a caller phoned in a bomb threat to the high school during school hours. Students were evacuated in the town's 3 patrol cars, diverted to the school to conduct a thorough search. No bomb was found. Another call came in on April 5th, with similar results. Basically, there was a dead end. He could not find where the calls were coming from. And after the dead end, Keck suspected that the caller was employed some high-tech means to cover his tracks. I didn't know if he was spoofing caller ID, using calling cards, a computer phone, doing it from overseas. I don't know, says Keck. The detective began searching the internet for technical guidance, which led him to Kevin Mitnick, who earlier demonstrated a technique for spoofing caller ID on the specialty cable network Tech TV. Based on Keck's information, Mitnick quickly ruled that it was not caller ID spoofing, but volunteered to give the detective a crash course in telephony, telling him exactly what kind of information to request from the phone company. Armed with Mitnick's advice, Keck went back to SBC and demanded a terminating number search for all calls made to high school's lines on the dates of the bomb threats. This time, SBC tracked the calls as far as a cell phone carrier, Sprint PCS, and identified the specific trunks in which calls entered the local phone network, information that Keck now knew how to interpret. The detective served a search warrant on Sprint, and on April 19th, he had the suspect's name and cell phone number. That day, 2 more bomb threats came into the school, and Sprint quickly confirmed that they originated from the same cell phone, which belonged to a 15-year-old student, Within an hour, Keck was escorting the teen from Woodshop. He apparently made the calls unnoticed from class. It was kind of funny, I'll admit, but this is not the time for these kinds of games, says Keck. The prankster confessed and this week pleaded guilty to a single count of making bomb threats. He's not expected to spend any time incarcerated. They're going to try to come up with some sentence that they'll put him on track to be more productive, says Keck. Mendick's role in helping solve the mystery made the local paper, and everybody in town now knows who Kevin Mendick is, and they realize that he helped out tremendously. But Kevin Mendick says part of his credit belongs to the man who ended his hacking spree in 1995. Basically, I gave him the same techniques that Tetsuro Shimomura used to track me, he says. And does the ex-hacker have any mixed feelings about helping busting River Rouge's troublemaking teen? He wasn't really hacking, says Mendick. He was just being a jerk.
Right on. That's true, because he wasn't doing anything, you know, like pushing himself or, you know, trying to figure out anything except for how to cause chaos and get himself out of class.
Yeah, you know, and I think back in the 70s, if somebody made these kinds of prank phone calls and these things, granted, it's not cool, but you wouldn't be labeled as a terrorist and stuck in jail for a really long time and tried as an adult. I don't know if what's happening in this case, but we've seen similar cases of things going down quite harshly. Well, this is kind of a article here that's kind of like pimping this new Linux distro. I guess it's not new because it's been around for a little bit. But basically, it's comes from Canada. It's a Linux distro called Ignalum. I think that's how you spell it, or how you say it, which is at ignalum.com, I-G-N-A-L-U-M. And basically, it allows you, it's Linux, but allows you to run Windows applications as well. So I don't know if it's using a version of Wine. I didn't get a chance. I pulled up the site, but I didn't get a chance to really mull over it and see if it was using Wine or not, or their tweaked version of it, or if they had their own program that we're using. This article doesn't mention it as well. I'm sure it has something like that that's already integrated into it, because most distributions don't come pre-set up with Wine to work and everything like that, with maybe a little custom front end and stuff like that. They probably included that in this distribution, kind of like Lindows and stuff like that. So check it out.
Good stuff.
Yeah, always good stuff. And believe it or not, you think I'm rocketing through these stories here, but I've got so much to talk about. Well, everyone's talked about, not everyone, but it's been said that CDs last for a long frickin' time, man.
Well, yeah, theoretically they should last for, half a millennia.
Yeah, they say that. Okay, well, basically,
except if you leave them on the dashboard of your car.
Yeah.
They will melt.
Dan Koster was unpacking some of his more than 2,000 CDs after a move when he noticed something strange. Some of the discs, which he always took good care of, wouldn't play properly. His collection was suffering from a CD rot, a gradual deterioration of the data carrier layer. It's not known for sure how common the blight is, but just one of the number of reasons that optical discs, including DVDs, may be a lot less long-lived than first thought. He went through his collection and found that 15 to 20% of his discs, which most of them were produced in the 80s, were rotted to some extent. The rotting can be due to poor manufacturing, according to Jerry Hartle, who runs Media Sciences, Inc., and he did some laboratory tests on CDs out there with that business. Rewritable CDs and DVDs, as opposed to write-once discs, should not be used for long-term storage because they contain a heat-sensitive layer that decays much faster than the metal layers on the other discs. Also, like Wine, discs should be stored in a cool place, a dry place. Koster's friend Mark Irons of Corvallis Ore, wow, they certainly give a lot of information about these people. Maybe we can go visit them and really ask them these questions. Basically stored his CD collection in his cabin, heated by a wood-burning stove. The temperature would range anywhere from 40 to 70 degrees in the space of a few hours. Now the data layer of some of his CDs looks as if it's been eaten from the inside. Iron is still pretty happy with CD technology since it beats vinyl, LPs, and tape for longevity. Now that he's moved his discs to an apartment with more stable temperature, he's noticed that the decay has slowed. You know what? Vinyl, I think, would last longer than CDs.
Well,
they don't deteriorate.
Yes, actually it does. It still gives off polyvinyl chlorides, and they actually do get brittle, and they eventually do kind of wither away. That's why, there's one of the guys from the Grateful Dead has this whole organization which he's going around and and taking the master copies of a lot of historical music and transferring it to DVD, or to CD.
Huh.
A really interesting guy. But I actually heard, was it a year or two ago, that in Peru or Chile, it was in a South American country anyway, that they found a fungus or a mold, whichever, that was actually eating away the information disk, layer on
the CD.
They were like, "Oh, that's freaking, that should only happen once."
Hey, that's the thing, dude. FBI is busting down your door. They want to get your data. Take the algae and spread it all over your CDs. By the time you go to court, they'll be gone.
Yeah.
Or maybe just, like, do something else.
But then they hit you up for terrorism because you're using bioterrorism, weapons of mass destruction on your own data.
They'd be terrorized. And it'd be bioterrorism. Yeah, they look at it. This bio thing is eating these CDs.
So you went from a 20-year sentence to death.
You're gone. So, yeah.
Isn't that great?
Hmm.
Or you can just have them set up to all, like, you store all your CDs in the oven. So right before they come,
I was just making myself a CD sandwich.
A CD casserole. So you put them in there, you put them on bake, and they're done.
Deep dish CD pizza.
That sounds tasty.
All right. Well, definitely. You know, I read a story, too. Well back, but... Put beer on your CD.
Oh, yes. I think we've talked about that.
Not your data CD, but your music CD. Let it dry up. Get some interesting sound effects out of that.
Yeah, sugar water would work, too.
Yep.
Salt water, too.
Anything sticky.
Anything that will crystallize.
All right. Well, Rambus, which used to make a very, very speedy RAM technology, which I actually have on this machine right here, files for $1 billion antitrust suit. Chip designer Rambus sued several major computer memory makers Wednesday, which is back on the... Where is that at? On the 6th, I believe, of this month, that they illegally conspired to limit production and raise prices in an effort to block widespread adoption of Rambus technology. The civil antitrust lawsuit filed in California Superior Court in San Francisco seeks an injunction and damages that could total more than $1 billion. It names Hynix Semiconductor, Infineon Technologies, Micron Technology, and Siemens AG, which spun off Infineon. Basically, the lawsuit is largely based on evidence acquired as part of the Federal Trade Commission's 2002 complaint that Rambus behaved illegally when it got chipmakers to include its patent technology into standards so they could collect royalties. The FTC's chief administrative law judge, Stephen J. McGuire, ruled in favor of Rambus earlier this week. Though the FCC is appealing the decision, which has written opinion cited several instances of apparent collusion against Rambus. We can't ignore the strength of this evidence, says Rambus General Counsel John Danforth. We have a fiduciary obligation to our shareholders to do something about this. Micron and Infineon issued statements saying Rambus were claims without merit. Yeah, because I think their RAM came out speeding, smoking fast, 800 megahertz speed on the RAM, and the closest thing I think touching at that time was, I think, 400 megahertz, and it was really good technology, and it was really expensive, but I noticed it just disappear when DDR came around and all that stuff, and I was kind of wondering why it disappeared.
Well, that's why they pushed it out. Yeah, I'm really not happy with the Federal Trade Commission.
Why is that, VR?
That's because that they've been doing a really bad job of keeping all the these major corporations moving to merging together. Like you get the Exxon Mobil people with it, and ConocoPhillips. Yeah, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you can go ahead and merge. Go right ahead, not a problem." And at the same time, what are we seeing at the gas pumps? That prices are skyrocketing.
Yeah, but it's actually the crude oil price.
No, actually, that's still about the same as it has been for the last...
No.
How much is it now, a barrel?
50.
No, it has not gone up to 50.
It's 50.
Maybe 50 now.
It's 50 now.
It was only 42, well, last week, last time I checked.
Yeah.
And gas prices were already sky high by that time.
Well, I've been following it pretty extensively, and the only thing that's really raised is that right there. And actually, OPEC has limited production recently. And OPEC is membering countries.
Yeah, that they export oil.
And, you know, they've limited production, which has raised the price of crude oil. And that's why, you know, that right there is a good showing reason of why it's like that now. Why the gas prices are higher now.
Yeah, but the gas prices were already high before they, you know, they started limiting the supply.
I don't know that. I think it was around the same time from what I've been following. Either way, someone's getting screwed.
That's right.
It's going to be me at the pump when
yeah,
I went there earlier.
Yeah, that's exactly me at the pump.
You know, but actually they figured out that the price of gas nowadays, if it's down to like $2 or something like that, versus, you know, it's up to like $2.30, some of these things. but the price nowadays is actually about the same price that people paid 30 years ago. Just
yeah,
inflation.
It's equivalent to inflation.
But I don't know.
Which is kind of funny because the price for a barrel of oil when they first found it was $40. Same price.
I see.
No, nothing for inflation. Thought that was kind of nifty.
Yeah, it's almost
so
a crap.
So there's an inflation involved, but it's still not involved.
Well,
it's all in the... You know, it's all for the benefit of the corporation.
I'm not doing a good job here by giving all the information, but there was a company, I forget its name, that's actually tattletaling on the Food for Oil program that it was a part of on how a lot of that was misused as well. So, I mean, it's just corruption all along the lines of big power and stuff like that. Plenty of money to go around. Give me an SUV. Buy me a house. Give me some money. Actually, this story... I wasn't going to read it. It's going to be the next story after the... It's going to be two stories away. I'm going to make it the story right now because it kind of goes along with what we're talking about a little bit. Basically, hybrid mileage for hybrid cars comes up a lot shorter
stinks.
Than what they advertise. Yeah.
Well, first off, it stinks, period, for what they advertise.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you should be getting a whole lot more than that.
Hybrid cars are hot, but not so hot as their owners, who complain that their gas mileage hasn't come close to well-advertised estimates. Don't knock the car companies for their inflated claims. Experts say the blame lies with a 19-year-old EPA fuel efficiency test that overstates hybrid performance, which I'm sure they don't want to change because it makes it look so much nicer.
Oh, yeah.
So, obviously, you might want to knock the car companies, too, because maybe they left it that way. Pete Blackshaw was so excited about getting a hybrid gasoline electric car that he and his wife had videotaped their trip to the Honda dealership to pick up his Civic Hybrid. Those people are very happy.
They were excited.
The enthusiastic owner ordered a customized license plate with Mo Miles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he started a blog about his new hybrid lifestyle. After a few months of commuting to his job in Cincinnati, Blackshaw's hybrid U4 vanished as his car's odometer revealed that the gas mileage he was hoping for was only a pipe dream. Honda Civic Hybrid is rated by the EPA to get 47 miles per gallon in the city and 48 miles per gallon on the highway. After nearly 1,000 miles of city driving, Blackshaw was getting only 31.4 miles to the gallon.
You know what's sad? Is the Volkswagen diesel engine gets 51.
Wasn't it like 73?
It was at least 51 miles per gallon. So that right there already gets better gas mileage than this hybrid.
What year was that? That was in the 70s, right?
No, that was just their new engine in like 02.
I thought there was one back in the 70s that got somewhere around 40 miles a gallon.
I think that was all speculation.
Okay. Could have been the EPA.
Yeah, it probably could have actually just been a rumor to, you know, then after the guy like built this car that could go 70 miles per gallon, he disappeared. Dude, it was all about the oil companies, dude.
Dude, my brother used to buy weed from that man, dude. I'm telling you, man, it's real.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know. Some of those stories.
Like the guy who built a water engine, and then he miraculously disappeared, and so did his engine. Oh.
I believe that could have easily happened.
Yeah, whatever.
What? Somebody invents something? Well, why wouldn't somebody come along and say, look, don't screw up our industry, dude. We don't want this to come right now. Because this is what people do.
Yeah, well, see, that's cool. See, like, I can handle that. Like, he completely got bought out and he sold out the world. I can handle that.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But, like, come and he disappears. Gone. Poof.
What do you think happened, dude? It was George W.
No, see, like, I could see that, you know, all right, he got paid a couple billion and he went off and bought himself an island. Yeah, I could see that. But, like, just disappear, vanish. Yeah, whatever.
I feel like a complete fraud driving around in Cincinnati with a license plate that says Mo Miles, says Blackshaw, who claims that after 4,000 miles, his car has never gotten more than 34 miles per gallon on any trip. 33 miles. The tenor of Blackshaw's blog shifted from adult adulation, to frustration after his Honda dealer confirmed that his car was functioning properly and that he has nothing, there's nothing that he could do. Basically, Blackshaw, who is a chief customer satisfaction officer at IntelliSeek, spoke to Honda regional manager about his concerns and wrote a letter to Honda vice president on April 15th that was not answered. This story has been echoed dozens of times online by owners of the Honda Civic Hybrid and Toyota Prius. Drivers, rather see the actual EPA-rated mileage in the real world. According to John DiPietro, road test editor of the automobile website Edmunds.com, DiPietro says most drivers will get anywhere between 75 to 87% of the rated mileage, with individual variations based on driving habits and traffic route.
Oh, I can just explain it away. Well, he's got a really heavy foot, so tough.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, there's a lot of crap out there in the world.
Which is really sad because I just want to go and buy a hybrid just to increase the demand for alternative cars. But it'd almost be like shooting myself in the foot for doing so.
Yeah.
Because not only do I still rely on petroleum, now I also increase the added industrial waste for the production of batteries, if there's any in there, or the electrical wire or whatever. I'm not sure exactly how those things work.
It's usually a three-cylinder with a battery.
Yeah, great. So I'm actually pissing on both ends. That makes me feel really good. I might as well just piss on one.
Either way, I think the way it's designed in this world is that they have technologies, but they're not going to release them yet until all the other ones are sold first. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can definitely
We've sold
that.
This one off. We're now ready to go to the next one. We've made all the money we can. We're going to the next one now. I think that's how it works. Well, basically, Apple iTunes came out with a new version, 4.5. And it's been broken, basically, to be able to siphon the music out of it and undermine the DRM. It basically uses a new authentication algorithm, but within 24 hours it was broken. I forget the name of this guy here. But basically, if you Google libopendap with D-A-A-P, libopendap, that's one of the programs he's on, Tune's browser. Libopendap is basically a library for connecting to iTunes shares and streaming audio files. iTunes Browser is an application built on top of libopendap and GTK for browsing and playing songs of various iTunes shares. And this also allows you to play, I believe this is the one that allows you to play it on different operating systems. If not, I know there's another story I read, and maybe I'll read that in the next show, if that's in the notes for the next show, that allows you to play iTunes on any system, any operating system.
On In The Now 2, the second part of the story will be revealed.
Yeah, we'll be right back. And we're back. All right. That was a good break. Good break.
Yeah. Okay. Very refreshing.
Very refreshing.
I feel energized and motivated.
You know, who comes and brings this much news for you? Okay, I'm gonna do some pimping of the In and Out right now. Here we go.
That would be Channel 3. They've got more stuff.
They've got Alona. Isn't that Fox 10 Arizona with Alona?
I don't know.
Either way, they both suck, and Alona sucks too.
That could be a good thing. I really want to start a whole movement of, like, sucking should not be bad.
Okay.
It should not be a derogatory thing.
All right. Wow. We've got a lot of stuff to go through here. But anyways, okay, pimping In and Out right now. Basically, where are you going to go to get this much information, and of course VR, in all, you know, 1 hour?
That's right. You could search through every bar and every hangout joint and not find another VR.
Thank God for that. No, just actually, this show is, we got a lot of information. But yeah, hey, if you like the show, just to go out again, go ahead and email us. Email address there is on the website, slipmodequest.net, QWEST.net. That's going to change there pretty soon, but just follow the site. Or, you know, you can
register. I know what it is, and I just missed that completely. Like, I didn't even have time to write that down or, like, even remember it.
It's on the site.
Great.
Yeah, so they can see it anytime. Or, of course, you can send me a message through the forums. It's slipknot.org/forums, and send me a private message there, or just post something, and we'll get back to you. Also, you can post stuff you'd like to have us talk about here on the show.
And our crack research team will hunt down your answers and more factual information about your question, concern, or interest.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have all that going on here, so feel free to utilize that resource. All right. Well, basically, the Sasser worm crashes Coast Guard computers.
Oops.
Man. Computers at the Coast Guard agency were among millions of PCs hit yesterday, this is back on May 5th, by a new worm that spreads over the Internet. The Sasser worm, which exploits a flaw in Microsoft's Windows software. They've got flaws in their software?
Really?
Distributed work... disrupted work at the Marine and Coast Guard Agency, forcing staff to use pencil and paper to find ships and locate distress calls on maps.
Oh, man, the old technology.
Yeah.
Tried and true.
The worm, which appeared over the weekend, began spreading rapidly yesterday as people returned from their bank holiday, and brought laptops that had been infected while surfing the Internet or turning on vulnerable machines inside offices. So bringing the virus into the secure environment and taking it out.
Wouldn't that be like the pink slip virus?
Kind of.
Oh.
Got fired, huh? Let's boot up the laptop.
Oh, no. Didn't you see the commercial? Like, you know, you need a vacation. It was like for some travel company. And they, you know, they're like, the woman's checking her email and says, want a new job? And she clicks open the email and it's like, ha-ha, you've just released the pink slip virus. And when they track it back down to you, you're going to get fired.
Wow. Yeah, I did see that commercial.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. Was that a black lady who did that? Doesn't matter. Yeah. Just verifying the commercial. Yeah, that was it, though. Henry Publica, watch assistant at the Falmouth Coast Guard, said the worm meant they could not use their computer systems. Luckily, we can still use telephones and radios. It just means we have to rely on our pens and pencils, he said.
And a sexton.
And a sexton.
We've got the sexton version of solitaire. Do you know what a sexton is?
Isn't it the old computer?
No, it's, well... It's kind of a computer. It's actually the thing that you sight stars with, so you can figure out where.
Yeah, but you move the...
No, it's not like an abacus. I'm not talking about an abacus. It's like a little, you know...
I've seen it before.
It's a little telescope that has actually a degree thing on it, and you sight the star, and you sight another star, and you sight three stars, and you can find out where you are in the world if you have a correct timepiece.
Yeah, but it's kind of... I pictured it. I forgot to describe. I pictured it, but I was just joking about the solitaire there.
Okay.
Yeah. But you could play solitaire with the stars, maybe. I don't know. There could be some way, like Pac-Man Manhattan, you know? Some weird thing to move it on. All right. basically.
And you think I'm weird.
Hey. Dabber exploits Sasser flaw. These names are getting. They're sounding more like food.
Wait, wasn't there the Sasser worm?
Yeah, this is a. Something that exploits a flaw in the worm. A worm that exploits a worm.
Okay, all right, somebody's got way too much freaking free time on their hands.
Oh, it's great. It's great, man. Okay,
you know, the worm's only been out there for how long now? You know, like a month?
3 weeks.
Okay, and there's somebody already found the worm and made an exploit on that worm.
Yeah, here it goes.
When he could have gone, let me make a patch for it.
Well, we'll talk about that, too.
All right.
Get something else. Okay. Virus writers have created a worm that exploits code flaws in Fanfamous Sasser worm to spread. The dabber used a flaw in the FTP server component of the Sasser worm. The worm will only infect users already infected by Sasser, according to security services firm LURHQ. Even though we've seen worms utilize backdoors left behind by other worms, this is the first time we have seen a worm using a vulnerability in another worm in order to propagate, it said. Dabber scans for Sasser-infected PCs on port 5554. When it infects PCs, it uses a code from the Sasser FTP exploit developed by Mandragore of the Romanian security research team to seize control of PCs. Dabber then installs itself and deletes the registry keys of the Sasser and other viruses. It creates a backdoor on infected machines on TCP port 9898, allowing hackers to download additional code, which might be far more malicious than Dabber itself. So,
oh, wow. So it actually goes in, destroys the first worm, and then allows for the exploit. Now, do we see a parallel between that and a story that we read a little earlier?
Refresh me.
The AIDS virus one.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's kind of scary about using a virus to destroy a virus, because then you go, well, now what exploits are now available in that virus?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of spooky.
No.
That's
right. So watch out.
It's all going to come to an end.
And on May 10th, a new...
Oh, no, it's not going to end on May 10th, is it?
No.
Oh, okay,
A new Sasser version, maybe, circulating. It was circulating. Basically,
that doesn't allow for the old exploit of the old worm that exploited it and killed it, and so it's...
No, check this out.
All right.
An 18-year-old German who confessed to creating the Sasser computer worm launched a new version meant to limit the damage just before his arrest last week, investigators said Monday, back on May 10th. Authorities who have questioned Sven Jaschen, I think that's it, got the impression his motive was to gain fame as a programmer, prosecutor Detlev Dybala said. All right. One can never rule anything out, but there is no facts to suggest it, he told the Associated Press by telephone. Joshua was arrested Friday at his mother's house, where police agents said they found him sitting at his computer. Investigators say that the machine contained the worm source code. Earlier Friday, investigators said Joshua unleashed the new Sasser E, a failed attempt to limit the damage caused by the four previous versions. He did it with good intentions, but it had exactly the same damaging effects, said Sasha Hanke, a Microsoft data protection official in Germany. Like the other versions, a new variant which notified users of a Microsoft patch against Sasser caused computers to crash and reboot.
Oops. So he tried.
He tried.
So he wasn't that good of a programmer.
Yeah, they said that didn't work because of programming errors.
Yeah. Because it's always easier to make something that destroys rather than creates.
Definitely. Well, moving along here. Covered quite a bit of subjects.
Oh, we did. Yeah, that reminds me of the whole, like, it's easier to destroy than to create. You ever tried to destroy an instrument while you're trying to, like, just bang the heck out of an instrument? You actually find that there's a melody in there that is familiar of, like, popular music. Because they're actually just trying to destroy their instruments, record it, put some lyrics to it, and then go, there, that's music.
Hmm.
Okay, it just could be me, then.
I've never had that experience.
Okay.
But I think I might be able to follow.
I had a couple of cousins that were banging on some of their musical toys. And, you know, they're like 2 and 3. And in the middle of them, like, you know, going and having a great old time, I heard Brass Monkey, That Funky Monkey.
Oh, God.
They actually played it. On accident, here's a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old banging on their child's toys. And they recreated
Brass Monkey.
Yes.
You know they're coming out of the new CD?
That's when I really, you know, it just solidified my own mind that chaos theory works.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Microsoft says Palladium is still alive and kicking.
Palladium?
Remember their big old Big Brother security D digital rights management system.
Oh, yeah.
Watching you, making sure everything's working great according to what their rules are.
Their rules.
Redmond denies publishing a report that is axing its next-generation secure computing base, and it's this thing that technology will debut in Longhorn. NGSCB is alive and kicking, said Mario Juarez, a product manager at Microsoft Security and Technology Business Unit. Microsoft is continuing to be vague about how exactly how much of its NGSCB code will ship as part of Longhorn. Officials have gone on record as saying that customers would not be impacted by the technology until Microsoft delivered version 2 of the NGSCB platform. The company has not provided a date for version 2. In spite of these facts, the plan of the record continues to be to deliver version 1 as part of technology in Longhorn. Juarez acknowledges that Microsoft is reworking its NGSCB technology to enable independent software vendors and customers with a way to allow their existing applications to take advantage of NGSCB. Well, it's nice. They're letting people share.
I'm kind of getting the image of a frog kicking back in a pot of water. And, like, the first step is they go from cool to medium, and then the second step is from medium to hot. And then the next step will be boil. And we'll be all just going, wow, isn't this nice?
It's toasty in here.
And then all of a sudden we're boiled frog.
All right. Oh, and also, basically, at the Win HEC show that kicked off there late April, they had an alpha version of Longhorn out there. Microsoft had an alpha version of Longhorn. Mostly, this conference has to do with low-end stuff that makes the operating system tick, you know, the innards and all that goodness. But they did a big, big showing for Longhorn, but here's some interesting facts about Longhorn that they say will be the minimum requirements for Longhorn to run. Microsoft's expected that to recommend that the average Longhorn PC should feature a dual-core CPU running at 4 to 6 gigahertz with a minimum of 2 gigs of RAM and up to a terabyte of storage, a 1 gigabit built-in Ethernet wired port, and an 802.11g wireless link, and a graphics processor that runs 3 times faster than those on the market today.
Wow.
That's the suggested minimum.
That would, make my whole system completely
obsolete. The average. Sorry, not the minimum, the average.
That still would make, my whole system obsolete trying to run on it.
When I put the 2.6 kernel on my box, ran a little bit nicer. I didn't need more requirements. It made my requirements run less.
Yeah.
Need less requirements.
So is that for all its big brother, like, storage stuff that it needs all that, like, a terabyte?
I don't know, man. I really don't know.
And then, even if you unplug it from the wall, it's still going to fan out through the wireless port.
I mean, it's insane. Like, if I had a machine like that, I would expect nothing to be slow.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know what I mean? And that's...
Because even, they may not have a point, an access point around, but maybe they're installing, going to have vans.
Secret Microsoft vans.
That are going to go around, and, like, the wireless point is going to pick that up and go, oh, it's time to transfer all my data. And as they're driving down the neighborhood, playing an ice cream cone, an ice cream van song.
I could see this. VR, maybe this. Maybe they'll say, out of your RAM, we're going to have 20% of it run specifically for the operating system, sanctioned, encrypted. You'll never know what it's doing.
Yeah.
And a portion of the processor that you can't watch. It's running. It's there. It's encrypted secret because we're protecting the companies. We're protecting them. So the system is doing stuff and you're not allowed to see it on a deeper level.
That sounds rather shiesty to me.
Yeah.
They're trying to be covert.
The article doesn't say that, but...
Yeah, but that's kind of what I'm getting at here. Like, you're being kind of covert, and it's like, well, then what are you doing? Well, we can't tell you. Well, why not? It's my machine.
Nope.
Because it's our code. Well, that's nice. I bought it.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, you brought our rules and regulations into your home.
That's tough on you.
Yeah. Bill Gates gets fined $800,000.
Why?
Maybe just be pocket change for the richest man in the world, but Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates has been fined $800,000 by a federal government for violating an antitrust rule. Now, not antitrust with all the antitrust cases. The Justice Department said Gates has agreed to pay the civil penalty to settle a charge that he violated pre-merger reporting requirements in a civil suit filed in federal court in Washington Monday, back in early May there. The department said Gates' error stemmed from his acquisition more than $50 million in voting stock in ICOS. So it's kind of a get charged for doing some financial misgivings, not doing it properly.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's like now, like before the... See, if I'm wrong on any of this, just, you know, post something on the forum so I can, you know, let me know. If I remember right, that before the...
We have a section dedicated to you on forums.
Good, good.
I'm just kidding.
That before the big stock market crash, you know, that led to the depression, that all these companies at the time were merging and, you know, all the CEOs were doing all this,
Enron stuff?
Yeah, Enron stuff. And, you know, and everybody was in the stock market. And all of a sudden, you know, the Trade Commission found out that all the accounting processes were a little off. And everybody wanted to get out.
Oh, yeah, that's where Quest all of a sudden, like, wait. We made this much money instead of this much money to this year.
Uh-huh. You know? And so I'm really kind of getting a little frightened that the same things are occurring now as did then. So are we going to have a big stock market crash and, you know, another depression?
Seems like people are generally trying to always screw everyone else. And, you know, it seems like the only way that people learn to survive after that is trying to not screw everyone else, or you know, they get screwed,
yeah,
right? So they're like, well, I'll do this a little bit because they're doing a lot of it, and I'll just do a little bit.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, that kind of worked. Well, maybe to make it work better, I'll do more of it.
Well, it and becomes then, that. Well, that little screw becomes
it grows.
That well, that that faster. Becomes past, you know, passé. It's not that big a deal anymore. So let's we can do that because it's not that big of a shift now.
Yeah, and they do much worse. We could do this. You know, and it just keeps going and going and going and going. Basically, also, they say they're upping the price of Windows due to all the worms and everything that's hitting it, and security problems and stuff.
Oh, like
that.
They have, like they do any work for that?
Oh, well, I think they're doing a lot better.
Ooh, they have to make a patch for something that they created that had a hole in it in the first place.
Yeah, they're spending that's what they're doing. They're spending a lot of work making these better, so they're upping the price of Windows a little bit. So.
Oh, yeah.
And also here, pirated Windows versions and worms, basically should Microsoft supply patches for bootleg copies? And basically right now, if you have Windows XP and you have a bootleg copy, you're not able to patch it because it's not a legitimate copy. But then, if you're not able to patch it and it's out there on the internet, it's affecting other people.
Right, because you're allowing other worms to propagate.
Yeah, just run amok. So, you know, how do they handle that?
So they really should just take on the, you know, the open source version of it and just give everybody, you know, patches. That would mean that there would be less patches that they would have to create.
Or if they just, like, disabled... If they know it's not the right operating system,
yeah,
then disable it.
That's true, too.
You know, then they can say, well, they shouldn't have that much power, but I don't know.
Or why not actually, like, figure out...
Just don't use
how,
it.
Yeah, or, like, figure out how... They should know how all these things are exploiting them and be able to nip it in the bud.
Who's they? What do you mean by they?
Microsoft. How...
Oh, well, they have to send patches, and I'm saying that they can't patch it. Because they're not a legitimate copy.
Well, I'm saying, well, why don't they make, you know, they should have figured out by now on how to stop things exploiting it. If they put all this work into it, there shouldn't be very many holes.
Well, they started with the holes, and then they got the information later to fix the holes.
Yeah. why are they able to have holes in the first place?
Because nothing's perfect.
Well, it's true, but it should only have a few holes and not like every other week there's a whole new hole.
We're talking about Microsoft.
Yeah, so why not like put the work into not patching it, but figuring out why there's holes in the first place?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, definitely.
You don't nip it in the bud. Then they'll actually be, you know, then they'll do some good.
But for now, I would just, I would do something different if you're really worried about that.
Invest in cork.
Cork?
To patch.
Cork?
Cork the holes. Cork them like a wine bottle.
I see. All right. Well, here's the last story of the show. Can't believe we squeezed them all in here. But basically, the SCO group copies from a book and settles with a publisher company. They did some copying of somebody else's property. The SCO group won't be going to court over chapters of a system administration book it copied without permission. Controversial Unix vendor the SCO group apparently has paid to settle a copyright infringement complaint from San Francisco publisher No Starch Press. We have no issues with SCO at this time, said No Starch founder Bill Pollack in a telephone interview Tuesday, back on May 11th. However, Pollack said last fall that he would insist on payment from SCO in order to resolve the copyright dispute. So basically, they stole somebody's information, used it, and had to pay him off to make him happy.
Well, at least they said what they stole, or what they copyright infringed. I think that was pretty cool.
What was cool? Who said?
Oh, that the, you know, that they were actually good about somebody going, hey, you know what, you did some copyright infringement, and here's what you copyrighted. And they went, oh, okay, well.
Like, yeah, we better rectify that, because right now we're trying to say somebody did that to us.
Yeah, and we won't tell them what they supposedly have infringed upon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's it.
Yeah. Yay.
All right.
They all rejoiced. Yay.
Yes. Well, I think, man, I've had a busy day. Did the show. Got to do some more after this. But I think that's it for the show.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully there isn't too much background noise from this mic. I'll try to clean it up, make everything sound nice. But I guess that's it. I guess we'll see everyone in...
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And later.
This is your host, Slip Mode, signing out, NVR.
Is out of here.
He's out of here. All right, see everyone in 2 weeks.
Lose yourself.
my mind again. Lose my mind again.